Hello, everyone, and thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder, author of Getting Better When You Can't. This is a podcast that's designed to help you see beyond everything. I believe you'll find the content interesting, engaging, and even life-changing. Please check out my website at www.kevinwinder.com and be sure to sign up for my weekly newsletter entitled Winder's Windshield. Thanks so much for tuning in, and now on to the KevCast. Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back to another episode. Welcome to Sunday. I hope you're having a great weekend. I hope the rest of your day goes awesome, that you're having a weekend that recreates you, that recharges you and prepares you for another week. I know for myself, I really needed this weekend. I had a really crazy week at work and needed to get some new perspective so that I could take the day and the week and see where it goes. So anyway, I want to start a new series. We just finished up a 3-week series on love. I hope you'll go back and check it out. Today, I'm going to talk about an allegory that is in the Bible, and it's a text that is not commonly understood or even discussed. In fact, I cannot remember ever hearing a sermon on this passage. I know certainly that it's been done. I'm not saying that nobody has for sure. I just haven't myself. And I think it's because it's kind of an obscure passage, and we're going to get to it. The title of today's talk is called A Flute and a Dirge. So a flute and a dirge. As we mature, we discover there is always more to every story. And today's talk is going to kind of weave some themes together. So you're going to have to kind of keep them in the back of your mind as we go through these and see if you can make the connections between them. If you do, I think it's going to be pretty helpful to you. Now, what I just said was, as we mature, we discover there's always more to every story. And that's a very important perspective because there is always a backstory. And all that transpires is, you know, that we're aware of is not all that is. There's so much behind the scenes, so to speak, right? If you see a couple talking in a coffee shop, you can make assumptions about them, but you don't know anything about their backstory or the significance of their relationship or what that conversation is about. There is so much that's beyond the scenes, okay? There is what appears to be happening in front of you, and then there is what is really happening behind it all. Okay, and so I really want you to kind of dial into that nuance because there are two things happening. And if we have the eyes to see this intersection, because it really is an intersection between two worlds, but if we can see that, if we can see that there's the thing that's fronting, and then there's the thing that's really behind it, the corpus of everything that's behind it, which we can't completely see. If you see that intersection, then we can discern a broader spectrum of reality. And that's really the big question in philosophy and life and religion, is what is ultimate reality? Now, as kids, we capture what is possible, not just what is observable, right? That's the whole nature of play and what we call make-believe. Because in the kids' world, just about anything is possible. A car can fly and a horse can talk and toys can do just about anything. And there's something that they're tapping into that's really important because they're not limited by observable facts. Now, we might try and train that out of people, but there's something that's really important here. Now, as we gain discernment, we intuitively learn that not all is fine when somebody says, hey, I'm fine, right? You ask somebody how they're doing, I'm fine, good. Sometimes you kind of know, well, thank you for saying that, but I know not all is well with you, right? There's something going on. How did you know that? It wasn't in the words they said. It wasn't in the observable facts. It was something in the intuition into that aspect of things. Sight, then, is the ability to see more than two dimensions of a moment. If you can only see the one dimension, you don't really have sight. We're talking about spiritual sight, deeper sight, insight. You got to see more than just those two dimensions. You got to see like the whole corpus of things. And it's way bigger, right? You realize that each moment is way, way bigger than what's being presented to you. These are actually two kingdoms colliding with the present dimension. It's kind of a temporal facade kingdom and the true lasting kingdom. And I'll let you decide which is which. The idea precedes the product, right? You get inspiration to go paint a painting, write music, create music, build something, work on something. It comes in the form of an idea, of an inspiration. That's an intangible reality. It is a reality. It's not just non-reality. It's actually what's the darn word I'm looking for? Gosh, it's a reality that's higher than the factual side of things. And it starts there and moves into production through our minds, through our wills, through our actions, through our purchases, until we actually have something that is in space and time, exactly what we thought it could be, right? The idea precedes the product. The word becomes flesh, like it says in John 1:14. The ability to perceive that, the thing behind the thing, is what I call spirituality. It's the plane of truth that is higher up and further back than observational facts. It encompasses reality on an entirely other level. And this is what many call higher consciousness. They might call it awareness. They might call it a vibration, a higher vibration. Some people call it intuition. Wisdom is the skill to employ this consciousness or sight. So wisdom is the ability, it's a skill. It's a skill to see both worlds, okay? So this is important because this allegory I'm going to share with you kind of pulls on these themes. And I think the reason the allegory confuses people is because they're not interjecting these categories into it, or they don't contain the necessary pieces of the puzzle. And so when they read it, it doesn't quite make sense. So I wanted to put this in there. So now we can kind of move into the allegory. And historically, a flute is an instrument of dance. It's bright, it's lively, it has a nice tone that lifts people upward into a happier place, right? You can just see flute and la 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 la. And by contrast, a dirge song is solemn and mournful, and it captures the downward mood of a funeral or loss, right? And the same instrument, the flute, can actually play both. You could play both on the guitar, a piano, no matter what it is. You can put your music in drop D or something else, tune it down, and it has a very different tone to it, doesn't it? And this is important because in this allegory, they use these two terms. So let's test your sight. What's happening when the flute is playing and no one is dancing? What's happening on that other level when nobody is mourning, when the dirge is being played? The verse out of Luke 7:31-32 says, "To what then shall I compare this people of this generation? And what are they like? Well, they are like children sitting in a marketplace and calling to one another. We played the flute for you, and you didn't dance. We sang a dirge, and you did not weep." You see, when children watch the world and they see apathy, it confuses them. Children are confused by apathy. Children in their innocence engage enthusiastically in life because they intuit the thing behind the thing, and they care very little for its container. So in this world of make-believe, they're getting at something that's behind it all, right? They love to dance and move and be free and be kids. And we try and train them out of that, don't we? Because it's annoying as an adult, because we see things differently. Kids are going to dance or mourn because the music compels them to. They're not distracted by ulterior motives, subplots, schemes, other people's agenda, or whether or not people are watching. Kids live in the present moment. And dare I say, they live in the real world. Now, when Jesus uses this analogy of modern people, he's capturing something that exists today. Our world is apathetic. Our world is completely numb. It's caught up in religion and completely anesthetized to spirituality. And when I say caught up in religion, I'm not just talking about people who are churchgoers, Christians or Buddhists or, you know, any mainline denomination or religion. I am not talking that those are the only ones. No. If you're caught up in business, you're caught up in religion. Trust me, there is a religion of your business that you follow. If you're caught up in your sport and your athletics, you're caught up in religion. If you're caught up in your education, you know, or your educational pursuits, if you're caught up in your, it doesn't matter, insert anything in that blank. It becomes a religious endeavor because there are things in your life that you will sacrifice in order to get from that thing that you're pursuing. It becomes kind of a surrogate God, if you will. And the system that delivers you to the high levels of success in that are simply the rules and regulations that you have to follow. And if you wanted to be a top athlete, you would have to make sacrifices to your diet and exercise and friendships and time off and other things so that you could serve the God of the gold medal, ultimately. That's not a bad thing. I'm just putting it in religious language. And that's why I say our world is apathetic and numb, because it's caught up in religion and it's completely anesthetized to spirituality. And that's what the kids are at. You see, we always want it both ways. We want freedom, but we live and work in systems of fear and compliance, don't we? We want change, but we fear making personal changes. We dread it. We drag it on. We eventually don't do it. Just look at your New Year's resolutions and see how you're doing. We all seek empowerment, but we settle over and over again for the same old, same old. We hate our political choices, but most just vote the party line, right? We know that there's more to life, but spirituality makes us nervous. Now, that's important because you're seeing two sides of something here. The apathy is producing a disposition that negatively influences the way you see the world. And Luke 7:33-34 continues by saying, you know, John the Baptist has come eating no bread and drinking no wine. And you say, he has a demon. And the Son of Man has come eating and drinking. And you say, look at him, a glutton and a drunkard, a friend of tax collectors and sinners. You see, we create a posture where we can't be pleased by anything. This is the old damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of disposition. It's a byproduct of our own apathy. The reality is that the dance is right before us and the music is playing. But we sit on the sidelines judging externals when we need to be living from the inside out. Apathy fills the void where soul work is needed. Apathy plagues the religious and the irreligious alike. And like I said, everybody's religious in one sense. But those who wouldn't define themselves that way, it plagues you too. You know you're just as apathetic as anybody else when it comes to certain things. So what's it going to take to wake the world up from this kind of apathy? Is it going to take an ecological disaster, an economic collapse, a humanitarian crisis, a corporate corruption, or a human rights violations? You see, every single possible scenario is happening today because people lack the skill. Remember, wisdom is a skill to address the soul problem, the soul level problem, that thing that's higher up and further back that most people are anesthetized to. You see, we can't bring the true kingdom, the lasting kingdom, to bear in the temporal kingdom. And that's probably because we just can't see it. We can't see it. We think that this is the thing that lasts. Let me ask you, what do you think lasts longer, your life or the memory of your life? Right? I mean, we all know of George Washington, and we have stories about George Washington, and those stories and memories that have been transmitted down have outlasted his physical life. So which is really the lasting world, the physical corporeal reality, or that thing which is higher up and further back? You see, where all our ideas and inspiration and things come, the spiritual world. See, all around us, we construct mind-numbing systems, right? We go to work in a mind-numbing system. We come home and we play our sports or our music or our academics or something else in a mind-numbing system. And if we have the eyes to see them as such, then we have the responsibility to change or leave them. And this includes your church. Many of the churches and religious institutions are completely mind-numbing systems. You're not getting better. You haven't changed in 20 years. You've been going there. Nothing has progressed. Time to wake up. And you too, like all the others who see it in politics and academics and sports and everything else, you have the responsibility to change it, or you must leave them. But why don't we? We don't. We just keep going on with them time and time again. Now, mourning and dancing combine to create a life worth living, like it says in Ecclesiastes 3:4. But spiritual apathy is the loss of skill or wisdom. Can't you see the connection now? Skill or wisdom undoes apathy. It's practice, it's engagement, it's being involved. And so what has to change to make us dance again? Well, we got to enter the dance. And the last little verse of that section of the allegory I read in Luke 7:35, it says, wisdom is justified by all her children. Wisdom is justified by all her children. In other words, the apathetic are one kingdom that sees only the presenting problem. Just like those people in this allegory that said John the Baptist or the Son of Man, they're demons or they're drunkards, right? They only see the presenting thing. Well, only a demon would wear those kind of clothes, and only a drunkard would sit and drink wine. So they look on the externals and they make a judgment. But the children are of the kingdom that sees beyond externals to the wisdom beyond the circumstances. I hope that you've made those connections today. Thanks so much for tuning into the KevCast. I hope you'll come back real soon. Thanks so much for joining the KevCast, where we learn to see beyond everything. I hope this content has helped you, and I'd love to hear from you if you have any questions or comments or feedback. Until next time, I hope you have an awesome day, and I can't wait to have you come back real soon.